Hoi, and welcome to the Europeans. You may have noticed I'm not Katie or Dominic. My name is Mick Terreorst, and I'm one of the founders of Are We Europe, a magazine and storytelling collective. Since your usual hosts are on holiday, I'm taking over the airwaves for three special episodes. It's been a weird and sad few months in Europe. We've seen borders closing, countries turning in on themselves, long discussions over corona bonds. We've been missing a little bit of the love that usually makes this continent such an amazing place. So, over the course of three episodes, you're going to hear from nine Europeans telling nine very different stories about the things they love from somewhere else in Europe. We're calling it The Chain, because it is basically a chain of love letters from one European country to another. In this episode, you'll hear from a Romanian about a life-changing trip to the Netherlands, then we'll stay there to hear a story about Italy. And then, why not? We'll hear from an Italian about why she loves Bosnia. All of our storytellers have recorded themselves at home for obvious C-word reasons. We actually quite like the intimacy of hearing people from their bedroom or kitchen instead of a cold, dark, airless studio. And all these stories are part of the Summer of Solidarity, a pop-up storytelling project that's bringing together all kinds of creative people across Europe right now. I'll be back to tell you a little bit about that at the end of the show, but now it's time to settle in for our first story. From Bucharest, Romania, here's Andreea Sirbu. She's 18, she just finished high school, and her story is about a life-changing conversation while hiding from the Dutch rain.
Turning 18 is a pretty big deal in Romania. You get to drive, you get to vote. You're officially an adult. Some of my friends were planning big parties for their 18th birthday. But me? I wanted to go on a journey. I'd never been overseas without my parents before. It was exhilarating to think about. Finally doing it alone. Choosing exactly what I wanted to do and see. Experiencing a new land at my own pace. So, last November, I flew with my boyfriend from Bucharest to Amsterdam. I felt like I'd been transported to a different world. I stood staring at the neat brick buildings and the twinkling Christmas lights, totally mesmerized. Bucharest is a weird fusion of old blocks of flats, random skyscrapers, and glass buildings. There are beautiful old restored monuments, and ones that look like they're about to collapse. Amsterdam seemed so well put together. You could tell the buildings were old, but they didn't look like they were going to fall on you. Maybe it seems obvious, but I also couldn't get over the sheer number of bicycles. You can't really ride a bike in Bucharest. There's just too many cars. It was mind-blowing to think that there could be more bicycles than cars in a city this big. On our first night in Amsterdam, we witnessed the most insane thunderstorm of my life. We had just stepped out of the car when we heard this gigantic roll of thunder. Seconds later, it started raining so heavily that it felt like someone was spraying us with a bunch of hoses. The water swept across the streets. It looked like a dam had burst into the city. My boyfriend and I linked our arms and ran as fast as we could towards the train station. After we'd bought an umbrella and wrung the water from our clothes, a shop caught my eye. But maybe it's better to say that it caught my nose. Do you know Lush, the cosmetics store? The shop that sells all those brightly colored soaps and bath bombs. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it smells incredibly intense. Vanilla, cinnamon, musk, lavender. And there, at the entrance, was this very friendly employee. A pale young man with dark hair and honey-colored eyes. He gave me the usual sales pitch, and then he asked me where I was from. "I'm from Romania," I told him. And that's when his eyes lit up. "I love Romania," he said. "I've been there a couple of times. It's a very beautiful place." And so we stood in the rows of soaps and shampoos, telling each other what it is we love about each other's homelands. I often see my country being portrayed as a land of thieves, and when Romanians aren't busy committing crimes, apparently we're rude, or cold, or bitter. I've sometimes met foreigners who've said they can't believe just how little this image matches their encounters with actual Romanians. It's an image the rest of the continent has created for us, and it's super frustrating. So, to hear this tall young man raving about Romanians as friendly and outgoing, I was thrilled. And he was also happy to hear me telling him I thought the Dutch were warm and lovely people. I guess Romanians aren't the only Europeans who have to battle with negative stereotypes. We exchanged some small talk after that. It was a simple conversation. I don't even know if he'd remember it, and I can't even pronounce his name. But that conversation has stayed with me ever since. It helped me realize just how deceiving stereotypes can be. The moment you come into contact with people from a place you've never been to before, you figure it all out. It doesn't matter where you come from. It's these little moments of kindness that connect people. I left the Lush store with a really bad headache from the smell of all those bath bombs. It went away eventually, but this sweet little moment, that's going to stay with me for a really long time.
That was Andrea Cervo. Who knew such beautiful things could happen in a Lush? And since Andrea brought us to Amsterdam, our next story comes from someone in the Netherlands. Thomas van Nierbos is the director of the European Press Prize. It's kind of like a European version of the Pulitzers. And his European love story takes us to Italy.
I can clearly remember seeing the mountain for the first time when I was 14. I was on holiday with my family, skiing alone for the day, when I found myself at its base. I could not see it. When you face the mountain directly, you cannot see anything else. This mountain is called Sassolungo. It is not a mountain like one you would draw, a triangle shape with snow on top. It is quite literally a rock. Sassolungo means long stone, and that is what it is. It's impossible to describe what it feels like looking up, but I will try and describe what you see. Imagine a rock lying on the ground. Imagine someone placing the rock upright. And imagine that rock being 800 meters tall. A wall of rock. Not a wall like the one Donald Trump did not build, but a Game of Thrones wall. And when you see this rock wall in your mind's eye, imagine it in terracotta pink. When you look closer, you see it's not just rock. There are some patches of dark earth, some waterfalls on its face, but they don't interfere with the main spectacle, a million square meters of rock towering over you. On that day at 14, I could not stop looking at it. And since then, I have visited Sassolungo every year. It takes some hours to get there on skis and some hours to get back, but I go. And when I do this every year, for over 20 years now, I fall silent. I don't know why I love it like I do. Maybe because it is a mountain. We don't have those in the Netherlands, where I'm from. Maybe because it stands alone, not interacting or competing with its surroundings. Maybe because it's almost an alien being. No plants or birds or signs of life. Maybe because it is beautiful. Not in a Bob Ross painting or postcard or Instagram way, but because it is simple and strong, a long rock being a long rock. I know I love Sosolungo, and I know I feel the need to visit it. I think I like it because it never changes. The old-fashioned, family-owned hotel we stayed at when I was 14 has been transformed to a modern one, with a swimming pool and a chef. The mountain roads leading toward the Dolomites are improved every year. More tunnels and more straight lines. The city I live in, Amsterdam, changes every day, not always for the better. Sosolungo does not change. It never will. I think I like it because Sosolungo, once a year, slows me down and shuts me up. I go to Sosolungo alone. When I take people along for the tour, I sneak back on my own, pretending to have forgotten something. There is nothing to say when I face it. I talk and write for a living, but I can't explain this feeling. It is like a supreme being looking at you, not giving advice or saying everything is going to be all right. It is just saying, everything is going. Everything is going. And one thing will be here. And that is all fine. And next year, for that one moment of my visit, I will know this is true.
That was Thomas van Nierbos. And our final story this episode comes from Veronica Tossetti, a writer from Milan who, despite the crazy heat in Italy right now, is turned off her air conditioning units to record. All for the pleasure of your listening experience.
When I was a teenager, I was completely obsessed with Japan. I would gobble up Japanese books and manga comics, and I knew just what I wanted to study at university. English and Japanese. I still love Japanese culture, but pretty soon after graduating, I broke up with the language. Things just fizzled out. I moved on without any resentment. A new cross-border love was waiting for me. It was the summer of 2017. I was working at a public relations agency in Milan, but what I really wanted was to write stories. That's when I heard about Fuori Rotta, a storytelling contest for travelers. It sounded great. I just needed an idea. One day, a journalist friend of mine, Stefano, sent me some photos of some dramatic socialist monuments that had gone viral on the internet. They were so beautifully unusual. Stark grey concrete against an indigo sky. Jagged, unnatural, ugly yet beautiful. There were pictures of about a dozen of these monuments, all set against a backdrop of mountains and grass, all so different in shape. Some of them looked like fallen spaceships. There was a flower, a cage, and three giant clenched fists punching up into the sky. There were monuments like this dotted all over the Western Balkans, across what used to be Yugoslavia. They're called spomenik, which literally means monuments. When they were built, between 1960 and 1980, this was a single country, and a communist one. Now, these reminders of a bygone era span across six different countries. Some of the monuments commemorate political uprisings. Others are memorials for World War II victims. I was fascinated by these mysterious structures, silent and still, in places that once bore witness to terrible violence. I was desperate to see the spomenik with my own eyes, to understand the traces of history they'd left behind on the landscape. I was also curious about how people felt about their past as a single country, Yugoslavia, Were they nostalgic about it? Or maybe they'd rather erase the memory and move on. Stefano and I teamed up with Eliana, an illustrator, to enter the Fuori Rotta competition. And to our delight, we were selected. We were given the chance to tell the story of the Spomeniks. It was a trip that would take us from Slovenia to North Macedonia. I didn't know much about these countries before my encounter with the Spomeniks, but it was a turning point. I was in love. After 10 days of crisscrossing borders, I found myself heading up to the hill in Tjentište, a village in Bosnia-Herzegovina. I was there to see the Sutjeska Memorial. Out of all the monuments, I'd been particularly drawn to this one, a pair of huge concrete wings made up of human bodies and faces. It's a memorial for the Battle of Sutjeska in 1943. A vast and silent reminder of the people who died there. It was a hot, bright day. I felt nervous, like Indiana Jones heading to the Temple of Doom. The monument stands far from any sign of human life. There is nothing nearby, just an abandoned hotel that once served Yugoslav tourists and a tiny bar at the foot of the hill. When I finally saw those giant wings looming out of the lush green mountains, I was speechless, full of awe and respect. I saw so many other beautiful places across Bosnia-Herzegovina on that trip. The bustling streets of Sarajevo's old town, jam-packed with Turkish-style shops and cafes. The graceful arches of the bridges at Mostar and Visegrad. And, of course, the Spomeniks. In these beautiful places, we met unforgettable people. People who are working to rebuild communities in a way that moves on from the ethnic hatred of the 90s. To me, the people of Bosnia are a living example of resilience. They showed me a new way of approaching life, and I can't thank them enough for that. That trip was 3 years ago, but I still feel such a deep connection with Bosnia. I've been reading a lot of Bosnian writers, from Ivica Djikic to Faruk Šehić. I was supposed to go back this year for the Sarajevo Film Festival. A certain pandemic got in the way of that, but I know I'll be back. It's not goodbye, it's vidimo se. See you soon.
That's it for this week. Look out for the next installment of The Chain in your feeds, any day now. But before I go, a huge thanks to the team behind the Summer of Solidarity for making these podcasts possible. They've been posting wonderful stories from all across Europe this summer. You can check them out at summerofsolidarity.eu. These podcasts are a co-production by The Europeans and Are We Europe. Find us at areweeurope.com and europeanspodcast.com. This week, you heard from Andrea Sirbu, Thomas van Nierbos, and Veronica Tosetti. Their stories were produced by Dominic Kramer, Kaz Laszlo, and Katie Lee. Weren't they meant to be on holiday? Oh well. Thanks for listening.